want to be dependent on anybody. I just want to be able to take care of my grandma, maybe go shopping every once in a while.
These Wall Street guys.
You want them drunk enough to get their credit card? But sober enough to sign a check.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon, sponsored by DoorDash. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sunny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look at our podcast, search for Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, what's going on?
My life is, as always, a cavalcade of wonders.
Oh, really?
It's like otters playing with baby polar bears while unicorns watch on. How are you guys?
That bad, huh? That bad. Okay.
What's going on, Santino?
Wow, he takes a pass. Sonny.
Shoes? What shoes are you wearing? Is that a new briefcase?
I've had this briefcase for several months now.
That leather looks incredibly supple.
It's a very nice leather.
But does it have sort of a firmness to it too?
Well, it's
a body.
So it's actually structured. So it has this little mechanism. So it like opens at the top and stays
like a fish mouth.
Stays flat. I can't remember exactly. There's like a name for it. I don't know what it is.
So it's an actual shape. I mean, it's leather, but it's not like a satchel per se. But it's also not one of the hard briefcases.
Is it a saddleback leather?
Oh yes, it certainly is.
It's saddleback leather.
Wow,
that is 100%.
Is it really? How much did you pay for that? That must have been insane.
Well, you know, movie money. You know,
it was not cheap. But I also I also got it on sale on Amazon. So it was like cheaper on Amazon. Plus, I get 5% because I have my Amazon Visa.
Give me a number.
I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was like in the 300 range.
Oh my goodness.
That is
actually cheap. It was in the 400 range. It was in the 400 range.
That still is a sale price for it.
It looks
what the Saddleback Leather Company motto is?
What's that?
They'll fight over it when you're dead.
Yes, that's right. Hold on.
That's a good line.
What is the thing called here? Gladstone mechanism is what
that's look at that thing. So
my one
is there a zipper
leather,
too or no? It just closes.
No zipper.
Shuts.
Okay. My wallet, which is not a wallet, it's just a credit card sleeve because I don't carry wallets anymore.
It stretches.
It fits about 4 credit cards in it, and this way I don't have a bulky wallet in my. And this is Saddleback leather, and this was like $100.
Yeah, it's not cheap. It's not cheap.
But it's worth it.
But it's worth it because they'll fight over it when you're dead.
Yep.
It's got a 100-year warranty on it.
That's good. You know, I'm going to pass that on to certain listeners because I have my problem with briefcases, I'm always overstuffing it, right? Mm. And then eventually over time, like the strap might break. It comes off. So my wife said to me a couple of Christmases ago, I know you have a problem with the strap, so I got you a briefcase that it's like there's like these little bolts so it doesn't come off. And it's a wonderful thing. And it's true. And it's the nicest purse I've
Louis
ever
Vuitton.
Used.
Yeah.
It's a handbag, right?
Coach.
It's Dooney and Burke. And it's
Spade.
Right. And in fact, there's like the extra little, you know, the strap. And, you know, next thing you know, I'm holding it like a purse. I put it at my elbow and just holding it around. But there's no body. So I could fit a lot of things, but it now no longer has the body of a briefcase.
It's like a knapsack.
Big bag.
Look, the Saddleback, again, it's expensive. It's not cheap.
But it's a good value.
But it is a very good bag, and it will last you forever. And this is actually my second. I have one at home that I'm going to sell.
Oh, so the other one didn't last forever, did it?
No, it was the wrong size. It was not quite big enough. And this one, again, this one has a feet. This one is designed so it will stand up. It won't. It's not like a messenger bag, which is what the other one more or less was.
Yeah,
it was like
okay.
It was like a messenger bag, and it would kind of lean over and fall. But this one will just like sit there, and
does
I can like put things in
strap
and out.
Too?
It does. I have disconnected the shoulder strap for now because I'm carrying it like a briefcase. But it does
bag
have
talk.
A shoulder. Does have a shoulder strap.
So you know what? You know
I could talk bags for hours, you guys.
Well, you know our friend Chris Caldwell. Do you remember what he ended up resorting to, which is no longer the briefcase, but a like the luggage with the the rack that you
the
pull.
Wire, the wire, like the old ladies in New York who go grocery shopping with the wire. No, I mean,
but it looks like basically a carry-on for your plane where you have the thing you pull out and it's a car. And you just
uses that all the time.
Yeah, and he drags all his books. He's got a lot of books in there. So, I mean, some people have
no. That's the thing.
But I can't do that.
If you have a ton of books, if you're carrying around books all day, it's like it gets heavy. Mm-hmm. And those bags,
rollers.
And those
bags. He's got rollers.
So before I bought my first saddlebag bag, I had another leather briefcase. Messenger bag type bag that broke. Just like
they did just, not fight just, over that when you
just
were dead.
Just snapped at the joint. And I returned it and I got another one. And that second one also just snapped at the joint like 2 months later. So I was like, okay, well, I need to get like a real heavy duty bag because I do carry around a lot of books.
Vic, I have a question.
You weren't kidding. You really do get into this.
Do you carry around a lot of books, Vic?
I do, but I never get a chance to open the books.
You don't read them. I just carry them around.
I've been carrying around the same books for like the last year.
May I make a suggestion?
Your struggle, if you will.
What if?
Wow.
What if we were to get you some home fill books?
Home fill books?
Yeah, like in model homes.
Oh, right.
They're just the exterior levers, but they're actually light. And this way you could carry them around and carry your books, but since you're not reading them anyway.
Right, exactly.
You wouldn't strain.
Oh my gosh, all six volumes of Plutarch? You know, I don't know if it's six volumes.
But anybody who happens to look into your bag is like, lives, something else.
That's right. No, that would be impressive. Like for the bookshelf and stuff, and just people, and it's all connected. It's all stuck together.
They all stuck together.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
who Fred Barnes told us about some rich guy buying books by the yard.
Mm-hmm.
Just that for he filling. Had built yeah. a giant home
because he wanted to look
with
like,
a library.
Yeah, he smart,
went to a used bookstore, and he said. Mm-hmm. They said, "How may we help you, sir?" And he was like, "I need 72 linear feet of books." And they were like, "What?"
Yeah.
He said, "Yeah, I got a library. I want to fill
books,
books
by that volume.
Capitalism works.
This is why when I do win the Powerball eventually, mm-hmm. when my strategy mm-hmm. works finally mm-hmm. and I hit all the numbers, I am just going to buy the like Harvard ancient Greek and Roman
Harvard Loeb series,
the Harvard Loeb
series,
and put that throughout an entire room of the mansion that I buy. Be like, look at all of my knowledge.
I want to read about Catullus. So I went to a Crate and Barrel. This is years ago in the one in Arlington, the one in Clarendon, and we were looking at this is a long time ago. We're just looking at furniture and stuff and bookshelves, whatever. And I was we're going around that second floor, and I look at, you know, because they always have books on the bookshelves. And I found a book. Terry Eastland's book was on the bookshelf at Crate and Barrel.
Look at
that. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Wait, what was it? The executive?
Yes, the
Energy,
Energy
executive.
Of the Executive. Was that book?
Look at that.
Uh-huh.
That's funny.
Deep mm-hmm. pull.
It was signed to Bill Kristol.
Kidding. Joe Epstein wrote a piece about being in a used bookstore and finding a book that he had signed, and it was like to a friend.
That's bad. Okay, so I had a wonderful weekend. If my first time in Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh's great.
It is. Everybody says it. Nobody's ever told me Pittsburgh is. Yeah, it's like Pittsburgh, like with like 90% less homeless. And
give it time.
Much fewer people
because the winters are harder.
Winters are harder, and you have fewer people using the streets as bathrooms. It's really nice. So I went there to give a talk for the college kids, this collegiate network thing.
Collegiate network.
And while I was there, I would say the highlight of the trip was before I left, I had lunch with two Sub-Beacon listener friends of ours.
Hey,
Jason McKenna.
Oh, and Tanya?
Jason? No, it was just Jason because Tanya, he was doing CCD stuff. And Adam Novak.
Hey, all right.
The two of them met me at Premonti Brothers, a Pittsburgh
sandwich shop.
There are a couple chains, some as far as like Western Maryland, I think, but mostly Pennsylvania, and mostly the heart of it is Pittsburgh.
Did you get a salad with French fries?
That's what I got. No, but the French fries thing is interesting. So they love in Pittsburgh, they put, you know, French fries in like all their sandwiches. And so that was like one of the classic. I got a classic Premonti sandwich called the Pittsburgher. And it's like a hamburger, but it's on like soft white bread. No, but I'll tell you what. Jason got a sandwich that had like you could order like double egg, like get eggs on top. I was a little nervous. So I just want because I'm getting on a plane. So I want to get just the basic. you know, and those small, but you know, those American Eagle shuttles, the shuttles, not good for that. The Embraer, not good for me. And so,
so you flew.
Yeah.
Why would you fly?
Because I'm not paying for it. Okay.
No, but it takes more time.
No, not at all.
It doesn't take more time, but it probably doesn't take that much less time.
More total time.
No. It was like an hour on Pittsburgh. It was like,
right.
Well, that's the main thing. That's your main thing. And there was turbulence.
Uber to Reagan, security lines, flight time, Uber to wherever you're going.
Took me 15 minutes to get to the airport. There was nobody at the airport. Zoomed right to the gate, hung out, read copy while I was waiting to get on the plane. No delays. Got on the plane. It was about an hour. You're back down. And then take that to the hotel. Yeah. You know, I don't want to.
It's probably a 4-hour drive from here.
Oh, Pittsburgh? Yeah. No. So, less. Back to the Primanti Brothers Pittsburgh sandwich. So it's like soft white bread. So it's not a bun, it's soft white bread. And mine had a hamburger and coleslaw, which is interesting, but it's more vinegar based than creamy, and French fries and a tomato. And I got the classic. I didn't get double.
I'm sorry,
the French fries
are on the sandwich.
They're inside the sandwich.
Because the bun isn't enough carbs.
That's right. But it's good because then you feel like, oh, I didn't eat a side. Like, oh, I just got the sandwich, which is really great. But they have...
Are they like steak fries or are they like
fries? No, in between, like the normal, a little bit bigger than the McDonald's size, you know, sort of that medium-sized fry, right?
Okay. Not crinkle cut.
No, and not crinkle cut, although that I like those too.
Crinkle cut is the most underrated fry. Sorry, keep going.
I love crinkle cut. They have that at Shake Shack. So anyways, but I just got the classic because I was scared. Next time, I'm going to get double meat, and they have pastrami and cheese, which is like their top other number. Pittsburgh is number two. And the other one I said they have that I saw there is capicola and cheese. I said to Adam.
Gabagool?
I said, do they say gabagool here if I order? And he goes, this is a Jersey? So the capicola, really? Oh, that's so weird. But I over prepared because I went running the day I was going to get ready for this big sandwich, and it actually was quite manageable. However, I also got an appetizer of mozzarella, not sticks, but wedges. So they're like the triangles that look like when you're in high school and you can in grade school you
but
could
fried.
Flick them, but fried, oh, and it was so man. Good with a little marinara sauce. Now I have a question:
were they breaded?
Yes, it was delicious. It was a mozzarella wedge, breaded.
So it's a
deep.
So it's a mozzarella stick, just in a different
shape of a triangle. Okay. I have a question.
Okay.
I took the mozzarella wedge, I dipped it in the marinara, ate it, and then I switched corners and then did the other corner. Does that count as double dipping or no? Would you not allow that?
Well,
did you use the corner where your finger was holding it?
Eventually.
Did you dip that in the?
Eventually. That's, I mean, because there's three
that's,
corners.
Well,
there's
that's
three
like
corners.
Sticking, that's like sticking your finger in the thing.
Or is it like licking the thing?
No, that's not.
Was it a shared? Was it a shared? Was it a shared?
Yeah, with me and Jason and Adam and then I.
It's not for
whatever reason. I ate most of it. They let me eat most of it.
It's not.
And then
as,
like, no, you can have it now.
It's not as bad.
As
it's not as bad
as like where the open
jamming
mouth
it
broken,
in your mouth
and then
putting
you, that
you put
section.
It you put that section in, mm-hmm. but it's still pretty bad.
You know what, guys?
What, JVL?
I think that all of the double dip rules basically break down at the level of family, right? Nobody worries about double dipping when it's
just you and your wife and your kids. That's what Jason said. He goes, go
and
for
our,
it.
With our listeners, our audience is like
it's,
our
it's,
family.
It's like family. And as I told Jason, I said...
that sucks for them.
As I said to them, I said, you don't mind if I do that. I'm just going to put the tip in. I said, just the tip. Okay.
Wait. You can't stop there because you texted us emergency...
Oh, wait, what did I say? What happened?
Your house exploded.
Oh, yeah.
The water in your house.
Terrible story.
The water in your house exploded.
We have a pipe. You know, our house is like 1939, 1940. So in many ways, it's very solid because it's pre-war. The bricks are bigger. Everything is very solid before they had to make all those cutbacks and everything until for many years later. But we started seeing water marks on the ceiling in the basement. And
when?
I don't know, a month ago. And
and
I said, well, there's gotta be, we were pretty sure it's coming from the outside. We said, it's got to be coming from the outside.
That doesn't make it much better.
A leak. So we're working on it. So we brought in these people from the outside who had all these different things about the roof. My wife can explain the details because she handles this. And there's terminology about the roof that I don't know about. But the covering, the pipes and things where it drains out. And they said, well, this thing is broken, so we need to fix it and minimize it. And yet... we thought it was fixed, and then you'd see other marks. And then I went away to Pittsburgh, and when I came back, my father-in-law, they were, the in-laws were watching the house and the kids, because my wife was on travel too. A much larger stain that had spread, and now it's clearly like it's coming from
inside the house.
Get out! They're inside the house, you know. And so, yes, and so it was clearly somewhere between the kitchen sink and the dishwasher. And then my father-in-law's like, and if you look here, it's now soft. It's soft.
Yeah,
you know,
that's always bad.
At which point, then we called the plumber, and then I came home one day, and they had two large gaping holes, and they said, yes, it's definitely a broken pipe, but I can't get into it because it's behind like the kitchen counter. You're gonna have to get a carpenter to rip the counter out in order that we can replace this particular pipe, and that's where we are right now.
So you're
now
remodeling your kitchen.
Something like that. It's
the only
it's,
answer is just remodel the whole kitchen.
And Kate's like, but I love the old cabinet, so I just want it to be restored to the way it was. Okay. Anyway, moving right along, I did want to say, I don't know, have you been to Pittsburgh, Sonny?
I have.
Yeah,
I have been to Pittsburgh.
I went to a
wedding at the Andy Warhol Museum, nice. which was a lot of fun.
I didn't get a chance to go out that much. I just went out to a couple restaurants, walking around the block. But it does definitely have an Eastern European feel to it. It's still very ethnic-y, you know what I mean? There's like a huge Polish population, and like it seems like even on the street I'm bumping into Poles. And speaking of bumping into Poles, over the weekend, Hustlers.
Oh!
Poles. Hustlers came in second place with $33 million behind It Chapter 2, which remained at the top of the box office with $39.6 million. And in third place, Angel Has Fallen with about $4.5 million. Box office thoughts. Sonny, you're racking your head here.
I have none.
Oh, you have none. I went to see Hustlers yesterday, and you know what? The movie was, it said 4 o'clock. I left my office at 4:10. I got to the theater at Courthouse, and it was just about to start. Why is
4:22?
4:25.
Yeah, 4:25. So there's 25 minutes of previews, basically.
My AMC, it's a 22-minute preview window, and you can set your watch by it.
Yep. Yes. What is going on? It used to be when we were kids, JVL. You go to a movie. How many trailers? Maybe three, four, five. Okay, what's going on here?
I mean, what's going on is the studios want this captive audience to have to watch their dumb previews. It's interesting. I mean, look here. So the whole there was a piece in the Hollywood Reporter suggesting that audiences are getting tired of longer movies, which is just nonsense from start to finish. I mean, the highest grossing movie of all time came out this year, and it was 3 hours long. Right. There are lots and lots of movies that
The Dirt was 3 hours long.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not that audiences are tiring of long movies, but I do think audiences are tiring of having to be in the theaters for an extra 20 or 30 minutes longer than they used to be. And, you know, in theory, this problem should have, in theory. So when you go to a movie theater, right, there's the 20 or Newvie or whatever, right? That like ad package that plays, excuse me, that ad package that plays before the trailers.
Before the trailers.
For the people who show up at the movie theater 30 minutes early to have to get the good seats.
No, but see, all right, so once upon a time that made sense. Right. Once upon a time that made sense. People would go to the theaters and they would want to get dead center in the stadium seating.
Maria Menounos.
And so
she still does it. Yes.
You have something to entertain those people. But now that all of the theaters, essentially all of the theaters, have transferred to an assigned seating system, you don't need that extra 20 minutes of prep time. Now you still need some time to clear out the last theater and the last audience and prep for the next one. Although I don't think these theaters are doing a lot of cleaning and prepping in between shows at this point. You know, I'm just going to throw that out there. So you have the 20-minute.
The person who sat in my seat.
You got the 20-minute ad package. You got 25 minutes of preview. So there's 45 minutes. There's basically a 45-minute gap between the end of one movie and the beginning of another, right? Now, all of these theaters are complaining about these long movies. They can't get enough showtimes in, blah, blah, blah. If you cut out that 45 minutes between between showings, or at least cut it in half, cut it down to 20 minutes or so, you could easily jam in another screening, another showing per screen every day. All right. Now, look, there are financial things here, right? Like, I'm sure AMC and Regal and whatever get money from whatever company it is that makes Newvie and, you know, the 20, whatever. And I'm sure the studios, I think, pay some sort of premium to have the trailer shown. So, like, there's a financial balance to hit here. But I would gladly pay an extra dollar a ticket to not have to sit through 25 minutes of previews after the posted start time.
Well, but you, okay, so first of all, you don't have to sit through them.
Now we know.
Now that you know how long it is and that there's assigned seating,
right?
You just adjust your show up time. We now essentially get to see as many previews as we want, because we just show up. If you want to see all the previews, you show up on time. And if you want to wait, you show up at...
I'm also tired of seeing the same. Afterwards. I'm also tired of seeing the same previews over and over again.
That's not a lot of movies.
This is another problem.
That's not true. You know what I saw? You know what I saw recently?
I've seen the 21 Bridges trailer 700 times.
That's bad.
Tired.
You know
it.
What I just saw? I saw the one for Dark Phoenix again.
So what if they got rid of Newvie and the 20 and replaced it with Elevator News?
Just elevator news.
I love elevator. You know me.
That's how I run my.
People would be happy.
The people would be happy.
That's how I run my office here.
You don't need anything. I don't know. This is one of my ongoing frustrations. Is too many previews. We need.
Do you remember what a big deal it was when you were able to, for the first time, see movie previews on your computer?
Oh yeah, I do. I do, because
oh my gosh.
You know what I remember?
QuickTime will now play
QuickTime.
QuickTime plays a movie. You can see video off the So all of a sudden this trailer for this new Fellowship of the Ring. Yeah. They're actually doing Lord of the Rings and you could not have to go to a movie theater to see it.
And how big was it on the screen, right? It was crazy.
Or not have to go. Look, you and I literally bought tickets to meet Joe Black so we could see a trailer for the first Star Wars prequel.
That's not true, listeners. I went to see Meet Joe Black for Meet Joe Black. I didn't go there to see the trailer at the end.
And that's coming. That's actually coming back, kind of. The new Christopher Nolan movie, Tenet, they only showed the trailer in front of IMAX showings of Hobbs and Shaw.
Ooh. I would have gone to see that in IMAX.
There was another one recently that was just in theaters. But like, I would be okay with sitting through trailers if they were just in the theaters. If it was like an event. If it was like I can only see this in the movie theater, fine. I'm happy to get there early and sit through.
Queen and Slim.
But now
they
that we
be exclusive to
now
theaters.
Now that we can see trailers anytime we want on our computers on YouTube.
How about the Terminator trailer? I've seen that one.
Oh God!
Every movie. I'm going hunting. Okay, so
between I've seen 21 Bridges and Terminator Dark Fate.
Yeah,
the trailer.
That's terrible.
One terrible. And there are several trailers for these movies, but I've seen one trailer for both of them
over
like 50 times.
I remember seeing the first trailer, one of the first trailers I saw on a computer, I believe on an iMac, was the first X-Men with Hugh Jackman.
Yes, it was IMAX, sitting out in front of John Cuddarts' office.
And how long it took?
7 minutes
to
load
to watch
for
this
a 90-second teaser trailer.
Yeah, for a 90-second teaser, that's right.
For like a 240p image.
Yeah, that's right. So we continue to ignore it. Chapter 2. We're not going to talk about it this week. But we all, I think, saw Hustlers. You saw Hustlers first, I think, Sonny, yes?
I did see Hustlers.
And I just saw it yesterday, as I just explained.
Can I tell you how I saw Hustlers?
Please.
So I saw Hustlers at a 9:45.
Oh, yeah. Please do.
I saw Hustlers at a 9:45 p.m. screening, the Thursday it was released, because I missed the press screening. So I get there, and I go to my assigned seat, and there is a person in it. There's a man in it. A man who's sitting next to a woman who's sitting next to a 5-year-old, 6-year-old boy, and who is sitting next to his, I would assume, sister, who is maybe 9 or 10.
And you said, "Dr. Mattis, I didn't realize you were in town."
And I said, "Oh, sorry, you know, sorry, you're in my seat." He's like, "Oh, okay," you know. So there was the awkward shuffle where he like moves down to the end, you know. But there, this doesn't change the fact that there is, again, a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old in the front row for the R-rated movie set in the strip club at 9:45 p.m. on a Thursday. And I just I don't understand.
Say,
they're
you
sitting
say
there.
Why?
Now, look, I will say the children were very well behaved. They had their eyes glued to their iPads the whole movie. Sucks for everybody behind us. I couldn't really see it because they were to my side. But if I had been one row further back, I would. I might have actually had a heart attack. I might have actually had an aneurysm.
That's just irresponsible. That's terrible.
Yeah, they should be watching the screen.
They should watch the screen.
No, they should. They should not be out. No.
Look, now she's trying to give out. Him a. So put your eyes on the screen there, Victorino.
Right.
Would your parents have taken you to see Hustlers?
No, because anything with kissing was bad. It was about that violence is fine. Oh, there's kissing. Close your eyes. Oh, To Live and Die in L.A. and the guy gets his head blown off.
I don't think there's a lot of kissing in Hustlers.
Yeah, no, but...
not a ton of kissing.
It's not no. Yes. So we all saw...
Should we warn the people who listen to the show in the car with their kids that this is going to be a show about... where we discuss a movie that is set in a strip club?
Yeah, we should.
About
you've just been warned.
Dancers who steal
exotic dancers from
hardworking young men.
We'll get to that in a second too, Sonny. JVL, you saw it too.
I saw it. Did anyone else see it?
I think so.
Hustlers is an epic tale of greed, capitalism, and the financial crisis of 2008, starring Jennifer Lopez as Ramona, a dancer who figures out how to scam drunk Wall Street bankers out of thousands of dollars. Ramona's plan is simple. She meets rich bankers at a bar, slips them a Mickey, and then takes them to her club to party. You might say that this club has an international flavor. And the things that go on there are legal. Barely. Ramona and her crew take the boys out to play and run up their credit cards while they're half in the bag. Sometimes they use a hotel room. Sometimes they go to a penthouse. You might think it's wrong to give roofies to men who are trying to cheat on their wives, but no one really gets hurt. In fact, I bet that some of the guys wrote letters to their favorite literary forum about their experiences. I never thought this would happen to me, but I give Hustlers 4 stars.
Jake, I thought Johnny Ivy was here.
Vic, you got to watch Gene do one for one. Usually you're out of the room.
Yeah, I walked out of that movie with like 3 different thoughts in my head, but bubbling above all of them was, I can't wait for the Gene review. And when you said you wouldn't do it, I said, by God, I'll do it myself.
Yeah, it's... And you did.
The Club International. How could you not want to make the Club International joke about this?
Yeah. I
don't get it.
Very good answer, Sonny. Good answer.
What's Club International?
Good answer. It's like if Brazzers had a publication, it would be Club International.
It's the Dead Tree version of Brazzers.
Okay. Sonny.
Victorino, that's brilliant.
That's the only way I can explain it. Otherwise, it's a mystery to many of our listeners. Sonny, how about a big boy review?
Well, Gene hit most of the highlights.
It was an actual review.
That was an actual review. You know, here's what the movie reminds me of a little bit. It's like Lady Wolf of Wall Street. In a certain way. It is about people who are breaking the law, but they are doing so in a way that is portrayed as an indictment of the system, right? So the whole point of the final moments of Hustlers, Jennifer Lopez stares in the camera and she says, the whole country's a strip club. And, you know, the idea is that, you know, you have these bankers who are essentially stealing... getting rich while bankrupting the country and causing the economic crash of 2008. And so it's okay to take advantage of them and relieve them of their excess property. Again, Wolf of Wall Street is kind of is a similar sort of story in that it is about a bunch of guys who were criminals, more or less, but legal criminals. We are supposed to kind of be grossed out by what they do, yet you know, it is an indictment of the system as a whole, right? So I guess my problem with this movie, aside from the fact that it is like totally flat and visually uninteresting and has nothing really going for it on an aesthetic or storytelling level, is that you have all of these people who got all worked up about the Wolf of Wall Street and, you know, does depiction equal endorsement, blah, 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 screaming about this. Oh, girl power. Look at these ladies empowering themselves and coming together. And, you know, they're trying to get one over on the bad guys. But and I'm just like, yeah, really? Is that, are these people that we were supposed to like and to cheer for? Because the movie wants us to cheer for them.
This sounds a lot like my criticisms of Black Panther.
The movie wants us.
You're not reacting to the work.
To cheer for them. No,
you're
totally.
Reacting to I am the Twitter.
No, but I am reacting to the work because the work is, again, flat and visually uninteresting, and there's nothing on a storytelling level here that's particularly interesting. I just don't care about any of these characters. I don't particularly like any of these characters, but I also don't really dislike any of these characters because the movie is designed to make us cheer for them. So the movie does nothing for me. I didn't hate it. It was funny in spots. I was rarely bored in the theater, but I just didn't. It didn't really do anything for me.
It's like we watched two different movies.
And also, you were reacting to Black Panther without having seen Black Panther. Once you saw Black Panther, you said you liked it a lot.
True. I mean, so I didn't see it out of respect.
So
I was waiting.
Uh huh. Yeah. So please don't compare those two situations. They're not quite the same.
You just didn't have respect for the people who made this.
Yeah. I love this movie, and I looked forward to this movie for quite some time. In fact, I went to the theater, and I was wearing sweatpants. Speaking of which, here's a scenario for you. Your sweatpants are on for the day, but you're sick of microwave leftovers and frozen pizza. Enter DoorDash, restaurant-quality food with a living room dress code. DoorDash connects you to your favorite restaurants in your city. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app. Choose what you want to eat, and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. Not only is your favorite pizza joint already on DoorDash, but there are over 340,000 restaurants in 3,300 cities, so you might find a new favorite too. With door-to-door delivery in all 50 states and Canada, order from your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, and the Cheesecake Factory. Don't worry about dinner. Let dinner come to you with DoorDash. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code SUBBEACON. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter promo code SUBBEACON. Don't forget, that's promo code SUBBEACON for $5 off your first order from DoorDash. JVL, you like this movie.
I didn't like it. I loved it. I thought it
Thank
was.
You. I really loved it too. But go.
An American epic in its own weird way. I went in with no expectations whatsoever on it.
Same.
And I was kind of blown away. Away. It sounds weird if you don't say away. I'm Victorina. So you and I were both looking at Sunny. And again, I was blown away basically at every level. I thought it was the storytelling was very sophisticated.
I was a little, you know, obviously a little disappointed about the nudity because what you saw, you did not want to see, number one. But never that said, A++. It's one of the best movies I've seen this year.
I mean, it's a gangster movie. It's like Heat or anything else. But it's a gangster
movie
that's also about America.
I loved everything about this movie. I love the opening scene. Okay, it's a little derivative. You want to compare it to Boogie Nights, the opening scenes, and this is how it works, and this and that. But I found it very intriguing.
Magic
to be,
Mike, actually.
Yeah, yes. Right.
And except it goes not as good as either of those
inside,
movies.
Inside.
Except Choppy and
Wait. Inside. Excuse me. Inside, you're going in to see what their world is like from behind, and it was like going back to Sapphire in Vegas or something, or the Spearmint Rhino, or Olympic Gardens, or Crazy Horse, or Crazy Horse 2, or Gogorama, which is the juice bar in South Amboy, or the New Villager in Tom's River. My mother, in case she's listening, I'm kidding. That never been to any of those places. I was never kicked out of Joanna's on M Street. No, but I liked it. It's like going for free, and you didn't have to pay. Well, you paid a cover. It's the film price. I'll tell you what else I thought. Seriously, it kind of felt like, in a weird way, Lady Goodfellas, and I don't mean that disparagingly, but it's sort of like they're in this together. Everything's when times are good, they're great, and then all it takes is one bit of sloppiness, and then everyone can rat out everybody else, and then it all comes crumbling down.
Lady Goodfellas is a perfect way of explaining it, except that it's not derivative. Like they are not just lady analogs of previous characters. Ramona is such a great character. I
Do you think she or Constance Wu will get like an Oscar nom? I hope J-Lo gets an Oscar nom.
Jennifer Lopez ought to get a nomination. Right? If I probably see a better
best supporting, it'll be the best supporting actress role because she's not the...
Well, she's not the lead, but she dominates everything. She is like Brando in the original Godfather.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, she looms over everything.
She does. Also,
she is the most interesting screen thief since Neil in Heat.
Right, right. I also thought the music was great, and then the mixture of classical, and there's also the club music, and yeah, the part where she's showing
the score is fantastic.
Score is fantastic, and I thought the way she's showing the Peter Pan move, the twirling, and then she does the martini, which she makes look easy, but of course is probably one of the most impossible things to do unless you have her kind of core strength. I just thought it was,
and they do this. They do a bunch of different balancing acts, which so they pull off the trick of both explaining these criminals without absolving them, and they don't glamorize the life, but they also don't condescend to it, you know. Like I, and even the marks. So the guys they're scamming are not a uniform
type.
And they're not just like a faceless, you know, hey, wealthy Wall Street white guy number five. They're, you see the full range, some of whom are
the one you feel awful about.
Asshats who you want them to get. And some guys are just hard luck cases.
The,
you're like,
the poor guy with the mortgage. That was the worst thing I ever heard.
The guy who winds up getting married, who like is talking to her about a computer and the fonts.
Steve.
Who is Steve, right? Whatever his name.
You know who my favorite is? You know who my favorite is of those guys? Frank Wally. Right, remember Frank, the great Frank Wally from Pulp Fiction and from earlier movies from the 80s. He's a young actor. He was in Field of Dreams. He plays the young Burt Lancaster, and he's the kid. And of course, he is the richest of the rich guys.
The worst of the rich guys
who comes through the back door and the whole thing.
That's
the great Frank Wally. He's fantastic. I love Frank Wally.
The characterizations are so good that when the lead, whose name I've never really actually get. Her stage name is Destiny.
Dorothy, maybe?
I don't know what her
might
real
be
name
Dorothy.
Is. But when she asked, so Julia Stiles is the sort of in real life reporter from the New York Magazine story.
She
shows
went to
up.
Brown. I love
so when,
it. That's
when
perfect.
She says, where did you, so Constance Wu asks her, where did you go to school? And sitting there in my seat, I say to myself, Brown. And because everything about Stiles' character and the way she this is literally the definition of show don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
That I am able to sit there and guess where this character went to undergrad and be right before she says it.
It was great.
Right? It was great. I can't believe you didn't like it. And then on top of all of that, I would say it's the best movie made about the 2008 financial crisis, better than The Big Short. And it shows the ripple effects of it in ways that nobody else has really managed to do. That it wasn't, you know, so when, what does it mean when Lehman Brothers goes under? Well, it means that a bunch of people who work at Lehman Brothers wind up losing their jobs. Mm-hmm. And then it means a bunch of people who bought houses have their houses foreclosed. But it trickles down even to people who weren't
ripple
taking
effects.
Out crazy, you know, liar loan mortgages on overinflated houses.
Everybody,
right?
Dependent on this.
The whole, everything is interdependent. And man, it is an indictment. This is an in-kind campaign donation to the Warren 2020 operation.
Oh boy!
Because if
I'm
just saying that if you
Sonny
it
looks
endorses
like he,
that
Sonny,
kind
Sonny,
of view
Sonny
of the
hasn't
world,
spoken for so long now. His mouth
I think
must
that's
be so
what
dry.
You, I think
it's
that's
time
what
for you to chime
Sonny,
in.
Frankly, I think the politics of it are getting in the way of your appreciation for it. Now, for me,
well, I mean,
I like the politics of it, but that's
no. I think
that's a
I think the politics
level.
I think the politics of it are really what is driving your. Enjoyment of it because you hate Wall Street banker types. You hate people who go to strip clubs. You tend to empathize with down on their luck people who have been oppressed by the financial system in which we live.
Fair.
So I think that is why you find this so entertaining.
But Vic, on the other hand, loves all of those people.
Vic just loves
like
strip clubs.
It's like going back. I mean, going back. It's like if I ever went to one, I imagine that's how it would be like. And that was really what was great. I'll also tell you this. I can sympathize with their motives. They're saying, hey, these guys are doing bad things, so it's okay to fleece these bad guys. It's like this guy I heard about who was charged 18% when he went to the poke bar, so he took an extra mochi. It's the same thing. Nothing wrong with that guy.
Yeah, so in, some of the stuff it does, I would say almost everything it does is done without a heavy hand. One of the most brutal attacks on the class structure actually comes in a moment where Constance Wu calls Julia Stiles' reporter. And we are given the passage of time because all of a sudden we see Julia Stiles and she's pregnant. And she hasn't been pregnant before this. And at this point, Constance Wu is at least as wealthy as the Stiles character. Like, we've seen their two houses, right? They're equivalent. But the difference is that Julia Stiles is having a baby shower filled with a bunch of women who look like they have stepped out of a Restoration Hardware catalog. And Constance Wu, like, is a single mother who, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the class divide shows that even with the money, the class divide is still enormous. And
how
and it says all of that with this a simple scene without ever saying it.
But see, here's the problem with that scene, because I was actually confused as to how Constance Wu was living this life without
strip
engaging
club.
In her robbery.
Banked a lot of money.
Right. She would lose all that.
Who would have won? Who would have won?
She'd lose all that in fines.
Who would have want to marry her? And I'm saying that as an Asian. I would have want to marry her.
But no. But I mean, this is a serious question, right? Like in the way the film is structured, you see Constance Wu as like this stripper with these terrible bangs and awful outfits, and she looks like she doesn't really have any class, whatever. And then in the interviews with Julia Stiles, she looks like she has her life put together. But there's a disconnect there. I don't see how she gets from point. I don't see how she gets from point A to point B. Like where in the story does she get her life together? Where does the redemption happen? Where does her?
It doesn't happen. But at the end of the movie, she's moving back to Queens. It has all fallen apart, right? She's run out of money. That's why she's moving back to Queens.
Is she?
Yes, she says, I'm moving back to Queens.
Maybe this is just me not understanding the economics of New York real estate. I don't know. She's living in this nice place with these classy outfits. She looks like she is.
Has put it all together. There's still stuff that she didn't sell.
She looks like she has everything all together, and there's no sense in the movie of how she actually accomplishes this
shift. Do you like the introduction of the sloppy? Was it the redhead who comes who J-Lo brings in at the end, who is sort of that unravels the string? You know what I mean? And this goes all the way back to like,
she's Wingro.
Right, she's weighing over. That's a deep pull, Jake.
Yeah.
Excellent. I was going to say it goes all the way back to like All About Eve, but it's the ingenue, the new, the up-and-comer, and then Constance Wu's character staring at the new girl, or it's like Johnny, what was his name? Was it Johnny Doe in Good Boogie Nights?
Johnny Doe.
And all of a sudden, Burt Reynolds is talking to him, and like, this is the new guy, and she has that feeling the whole thing falls apart, and she's really, really sloppy. I don't know. I found it all very compelling.
You know, can we talk, because Sonny, you really like the capitalist system we have today.
That's fine.
Have you followed...
Gets me these great bags.
Have you followed WeWork?
Oh, I have been following the story. It's fantastic.
So for those of you who do not pay attention to WeWork, WeWork is a really interesting company founded by a fellow named Adam Newman, which rents individual workspaces to gig economy workers. You have one across the street from you here.
We do.
At the Washington Free Beacon Tower. It's a great idea. I actually think it's the future. Here's how WeWork, the corporation, works, though. They rent space in buildings. They then resell at a micro level that space, even down to the desk level. Funnily enough, they tend to rent their buildings from Adam Newman, the CEO and founder who owns the buildings, and pay him for that. And he is, of course, also then paid by WeWork with the equity of WeWork. And Adam Newman sold to his company, of which he is the majority stakeholder, WeWork. He sold the trademark for the name WeWork, which he came up with.
Just we. Just the we part.
For $5.9 million.
Yes.
He has been acquiring venture capital to the tune of, with a market valuation of $47 billion. All in advance of his coming IPO. Now, they've run into some problems. But I ask you, when Ramona is taking drunk guys and maxing out their credit cards to $50,000, that's fraud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when Adam Newman sells the name We to the company
for
which he founded the name Wii for $5.9 million. Well, that's just capitalism, baby.
Yeah.
This is
that's right.
What is a scandal is not what is illegal. What is a scandal is what is legal.
But what's illegal is still illegal.
And they get caught.
And they get caught and they get punished. They didn't get punished very much, though. It's worth thinking about.
Does that?
No, they didn't. I was surprised about that.
So this is, I've never read, this is a mail, right? I should have read the New York Magazine piece. I have not. But I can only assume that somebody just wanted this to go away.
Yeah.
Somebody somewhere in the New York judicial system was caught up in this somehow. He's just like,
Well, it's like when they explain the cops, and that's also true about the cops in quote, investigating. Right. I mean, you know, this is how that worked.
I spent little, you remember this, Vic. I don't know if you know this, Sonny. I spent an entire day of my life in a strip club.
That's right. For the New York Press. You had a great opening lead. I remember that.
That was one of the most depressing days of my life. It was.
They did multiple things, right? She wasn't it also phone stuff too, or no? I thinking of a different piece.
No, I went to this place because it was the beginning of what would become the cam girl revolution. Oh. And so it was, they were, you know, broadband was just starting to happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the idea was what porn was going to
technology.
Do with broadband. So what?
Cutting edge
and
innovation.
Man, oh man, that was a rough day. I would say even this depiction of strip club life, at least, you know, in comparison to the 24 hours I spent in a strip club with the, you know, backstage with the girls, even this was a very optimistic view of it.
Oh, sure. Did you recognize the actress who played Mom, the mom?
Who was that?
She was the mother in Big.
She's
Josh!
Great. Okay. Who are these girls? Mostly Russians.
Yeah, right. That's how the times changed. Okay. Any other thoughts, Sonny? No,
I really can't believe you.
I know. He has nothing to say. Okay.
Here's a real question. Do you think this is a semi-serious awards contender?
I think J-Lo will probably get some buzz. I cannot imagine the film gets like best picture.
Because it's too early. If this was released in November, then it would be a clear.
But it's also just play. It is also, frankly, just not that good. It is just not that good.
I'm taking him in the Oscar pool. What do we do, the Oscar draft? Yeah,
Going to get a lot of nominations from this one. This is like a 4-point movie right here. You get maybe 2 points for the J Lo nom for best supporting actress. Okay. 6 points maybe if she wins.
I choose mid-90s. That's what I'm taking. Mid-90s. Boy, that was a letdown. I never even saw it. Okay, I just totally did not predict the reaction that it had, which was none. Okay, corrections, additions, shout-outs. I've got two.
I have a correction.
Good. You go, JBL.
I got an email from Tyler Olson. Is that the one you were going to do?
Maybe, but it could be repeat. I mean,
Tyler Olson sent us a very long and very sternly worded email. You guys, I'm quoting here, were wondering if the Mandalorian was Boba Fett based on his arm. Let me tell you, there's a rich history of the planet Mandalore. Mostly, he says, they are a warmongering people that have fought wars against the Jedi and themselves, but that doesn't mean they're all bad. The armor is worn both by Jango Fett and Boba Fett, but the character in the Mandalorian is just wearing traditional Mandalorian armor. He would like to tell us all sorts of things, Mandalorians were the inventors of the dark saber, which is a badass one of a kind black lightsaber, and I blacked out after that.
I was going to say, shouldn't you be reading this in the comic book guy voice? You know,
the Mandalorian inducted.
So wait, does
Gen 6 Clone Wars?
So wait, are Boba Fett and Jango Fett not Mandalorians? Then they just wear Mandalorian armor. Was that my takeaway?
I guess so. And that's a plan.
You know what? You can email Tyler. I sent you his email.
I was going to say listener Charles, but he said the same thing. Watch the Clone Wars, he says. Season 6 Clone Wars.
Not watching any of that crap.
Mandalorians from Mandalore. Is that the planet? It's called Mandalore.
I've been to Mandalore Bay.
Have you been to Mandalore Bay?
They have $10 tables there.
I was going to say, there's some good craps at Mandalore Bay. I think there's even a House of Blues at Mandalore Bay. Okay, and then the other one was listener Jess says yesterday regarding JVL's statement about losing copyright. The truth is,
you
can lose trademark rights over time if you stop using/defending, but copyright doesn't dilute. I don't even remember what the conversation was.
I mixed up the legal
definitions.
You did, and I almost said something during the show, and I wasn't 100% sure, so I didn't, because I spent a lot of time reading about copyright for some reason about 10 years ago. But we should note that you meant trademark, not copyright. Yes. And I borrowed this concept actually from my Washington Post piece. I gave you full credit. Don't worry.
Ooh,
this week. So wow. Look for that.
That's exciting.
Thank you.
Okay. That's all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments, tweet us at Victorina Mattis at Sunny Bunch. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Just type in Subbeacon at a podcast. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends.
People should leave more reviews, by the way.
Yeah.
Because definitely. Somebody left us a 2-star review last week.
I saw it.
What's up with
did
that?
You know what? Did you read it? I read it because it said something like JVL is a tool and Sonny's ideas are bad or stolen and Vic is a pervert, and obviously only one of those things is three.
How if you get our show that well, if you understand us right. that perfectly,
stop
how
listening.
Can, how can that be a 2-star review? I mean, like that's you, right. you, right. you, right. you, they clearly understand what we're trying to do.
Yeah. Again,
we're doing what we're trying to do.
Again,
people.
Only one of those things is true. Okay. Until next time. JVL, I thought I was going to ask you when you were talking about strip clubs that I forgot about that you had written a piece in the New York Press, but I think you also, didn't you have to go to at least once in your life for a bachelor party perhaps?
So I've been in strip clubs 3 times in my life. Mm-hmm. Once for about 30 seconds when I walked into one with a, it was back when I was driving around the country playing basketball.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yeah.
The guy was like, hey, we should go in a strip club. And we walked in and I sort of looked around and I was like, this is depressing as hell. And I turned around and walked out. And then the next time was for a bachelor party. And I made it for about 5 minutes before I had to leave. Mm-hmm. Because it was just so grimly depressing. Like everybody was sad. The women who were working were sad. The bouncers were sad. The guys in the club were sad. And it was one of those situations where it looked like everybody was pretending to be enjoying themselves, which is the worst kind of sad. Because at least you could have like some dark bonhomie of like, boy, we're all, you know, got the short end of life right here tonight. And, you know, we might as well like keep each other company. But instead it was like, yeah, isn't this great? And I hated it.
So I went to a bachelor party in New Orleans, but I had arrived on Saturday. So apparently a bunch of the guys had gone out in New Orleans on Bourbon Street on Friday night. And
oh,
they went crazy. I wasn't there
and
for
you
that.
You just missed it.
I just missed it. So a guy, I will not use his name. He got, all of a sudden, there was like a, what do you call it, on your credit card when they block, you know, you get blocked. There's like a, you know.
Card decline.
A card decline on his credit card. And he had to call to clear it up. And the woman on the other end tells him, well, you know, it was suspicious activity because it was this, you know, Larry Flint's, you know, hustler club. No, that I'm at a bachelor. That's me.
That's
yeah,
where I am.
Yeah, sir. But then 20 minutes later, there's another charge at Larry Flint's barely legal club. Yeah, oh, that was me too.
I'm sure it's fine.